Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's creative is the beautiful Erica Hilton. She is intelligent. She is witty. She is funny. She is gorgeous, both inside and out. She's so smart. She's so well-spoken. I sound like a Rottweiler in comparison. Honestly, she is the kindest human I've met. She is also the artist in residence, the Immersive Van Gogh Chicago. That's vangoghchicago.com. If you need me to spell Van Gogh, I'm going to need you to go. Just kidding. She and I could talk to her for days and days. She is my new best friend. And yes, I'm going to gush about her because now we are into May. And although Earth Day is every day for me, you know this, May is move it. Move it May, whether it's moving pictures, whether it's art with moving parts, whether it's moving your body, I'm talking to you dancers, whether it's moving your cause forward, you're going to see this is going to be a good month and you're going to love it. So I recommend you grab that cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up or get moving with your host Pup. And I know you're gonna enjoy this show. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. It's art installation. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I have to get up to Chicago now.
Where are you?
I'm in Florida.
Oh, nice. I'll be there next week.
Oh, yeah?
Where are you coming? We're going to be in Delray and Palm Beach.
Okay.
Miami. We're going to go see clients.
Tell me about you. Tell me about little Erica. And it says you came to the U.S. at 6 years old with no English?
Not a word of English.
Culture shock.
Oh, it was a culture shock. It was crazy. I'm going to answer your question, but I just want to ask you before we begin, I love your name.
Oh, thank you.
It's adorable. Thank you.
So six-year-old little Erica, terrified, probably.
So we came to America. We moved to New Mexico. And they put me in a Catholic school, which was next door to me. And the nuns called my mother 6 months later and said, you know, your daughter doesn't speak. She just stands there and just watches. She doesn't speak. And so she's not too bright. We're just going to have to hold her back. And they didn't hold me back. I don't know how that happened, but the transformation of me not speaking English to speaking fluent English just happened like that. And I don't remember the switch.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that is dormant in my mind from that time period.
Hmm.
Yes. But one of the things that was very interesting when we came to America, and my mother would prepare my lunch, and she would prepare like feta cheese and tomato sandwiches, mm-hmm. you know, on like Italian bread. And I remember seeing peanut butter and jelly, and I'd never seen that before, on American white bread, which smelled like chemicals to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was like this surreal experience that I had. With the food. That was, I think, one of the biggest things. And then once I began speaking, you know, trying to fit in and being like all the other kids.
So the food is a little bit of a culture shock, because you're right. Some American food, it just smells fake. And you're absolutely right. What did you say? The feta and tomato. And I'm thinking, oh, please, can I have a sandwich right now? Because that sounds amazing.
I know.
And then to be so little and kids are not the most accepting of things that are different. So I'm imagining they were staring at your, what is that, a tomato?
I remember one kid said, what is that? It smells.
It smells,
like,
yeah.
It's feta cheese. What are you talking about? It's just feta cheese.
Yeah, well, your bread smells like plastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was horrible. I remember I could not eat American bread for years. I could not eat a sandwich. I'd never seen a real sandwich, actually.
Right.
We acclimated by making the feta cheese and tomato a sandwich. But, and where I come from on the Mediterranean, they don't really have sandwiches.
No, and that's amazing because that food is good. You said you didn't re remember the switch. We are little sponges when we're small. So you probably were absorbing it, what all the, what was going on around you and processing it. Probably even in like the back of your mind, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Hey, mom, yada yada yada," and that's how I picked up Spanish.
Well, I was raised speaking Turkish, Arabic, and French
Oh.
because in the southern part of Turkey, I think during World War I, the French had invaded at that time. And so all the old people spoke French and Arabic. And that southern part of Turkey is very Lebanese and Syrian. It's a lot of Arabs that are in Turkey. And so that's what I remember. I would listen to music, French records. My mother had all these 45s. Little final 45s, and they were all French music. So I ended up replacing the Arabic and the French with English, but retained the Turkish.
Hit me with some Turkish.
Merhaba, nasılsın? Çok teşekkürler. Bugün sizinle beraber radyoda konuşuyoruz.
Ooh, that's pretty.
So
What did
I
you say?
Hi, how are you? I'm very excited to be on your, I said radio show because I didn't
Yes.
know what podcast is in Turkish. I guess it's probably podcast, because they've now appropriated so many Western words, especially English. I mean, their English is the second language.
So you're six, you got into school, you got your English. When do you pick up a paintbrush? When do you pick up a crayon and realize
It's a great
this is
question.
it?
Yes. So, 10 years old, I decided
Wow.
I wanted to be an artist. And I don't know if you remember when we were little kids, they had these highlights in the art contests that you could submit your drawing. And it could be a profile, it could be a picture of a horse, it could be something. So I'm all excited. And a friend of mine, she submitted and said, "You should do that too." Like, okay. So I submitted a drawing. I don't remember. It must have been a profile or something, maybe a horse. I love horses. And, a few months later, I got a letter in the mail. And it basically said to me, "Thank you very much for your submission, but maybe you should look for another job."
No.
Rejection, saying
Oh.
basically we didn't meet our standards. And I'm like 10 years old, going, "Wow, I'm no good. I can never be an artist."
From a children's magazine, even.
Yes, where they had all those "Where's Waldo?" "Find the fish in the tree" magazine. And so that was traumatic for me. But I've never really cared what other people think. I just do my own things. So
Right.
eventually, I about 15, 20 years ago, I decided that I was a poet. So I wanted to be a writer, a poet, an artist, architect, lawyer, superhero, saint,
Astronaut, yep, same.
I wanted to be so many different things. I began writing poetry and I wanted to illustrate my first book of poems. And I had asked another artist to do it, and I didn't especially feel that that work was compatible with my poetry. And so I said, "I can do that." And so I just started painting, and that's how it started.
That's awesome. And now you have this beautiful exhibit.
Thank you. Thank
It's
you.
gorgeous. So tell me, I'm not art savvy. I'm not tech savvy. I'm not art savvy. Virtual art versus regular art?
So basically, the art is real. It's not virtual, but the show itself to be seen by the
Okay.
public is in a virtual gallery so they can see it online.
Okay. I was like, maybe that's something new I've never heard of.
Well, there is actually. Now, my show at Brushwood Center is on the walls in this gorgeous building that's on a 565-acre forest preserve.
Wow.
And it's called Brushwood Center at Ryerson Woods. And so it's all about nature. And the building inside has neoclassical features. It's one of the most gorgeous spaces. So it's an art center that's sort of like a in between an art gallery and a museum. That's where the show is at. However, to answer your question about virtual art, now they have something called NFTs. I don't know if you've heard of this. Okay, it's beyond crazy. It's non-fungible tokens. And it's a file, a computer file of a piece of art. Somebody designs something and it's this technical thing on your computer. And they can turn around and sell it to you as a piece of art for an undisclosed sum. It could be anywhere from $500 to $500,000.
Okay.
I think it was Christie's that just sold one for a few million. It's like the most insane thing you've ever heard of, but it's cryptocurrency. It has to do with cryptocurrency. So I'm trying to learn this now. I heard of it last week for the first time.
So
NFT.
NFT.
NFT. Yeah. Look it up. It's so confusing what it is, but people are doing it and they're paying money for something they can just look at online.
Okay. That's my question. Like, you don't actually get the piece of art.
No.
You pay a couple million dollars to look at the
proprietary usage of it.
Wow.
It's
this is a brave new world sometimes, I'm telling you.
To put it mildly.
Yeah.
It is. So I'm old fashioned. I want to have my art be tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Very tactile. I want to touch it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we're doing some very cool things with bringing the art to life. And that's the next phase of my show at Brushwood Center. In April, we're going to have an opening and it'll be a progressive tour with my art. So I will be giving a tour of the gallery space and where everything is housed. And then afterwards, we're going to go to the River Woods Village Hall. And there, I'm going to have these large hanging, like mobiles, like a 4-foot by 8-foot cube, basically. And it's going to be painted. It's a reverse painting on acrylic. And you'll see it from the other side with lights. So it'll be lit up. It's going to have like holograms and things like that. So we're working on this. So I've never done this before. So this is new. And we will also have a concert by Vladimir Kalinovich, who is the artistic and music director at Brushwood Center. And he was the former conductor of the Lake Forest Symphony.
Okay.
Which is a big deal. I mean, he's conducted as a guest conductor all over the world.
So this is going to be in April? And where is Brushwood located?
Brushwood is in River Woods, Illinois. So it's a northern suburb of Chicago. It's like a 25-30 minute drive north of Chicago.
And it will be open to the public or by appointment
they're selling tickets. Particular program. So it's two parts. One is the art show in Brushwood Center. And then the second part is the performance at River Woods Village Hall. And okay. River Woods is the town. So okay. They have this really cool building with 20, 30-foot ceilings and beautiful acoustics to do a concert, poetry reading, and art show there as well.
It sounds amazing. It also sounds confusing because I am not in the know, but I want to be in the know. I want to learn. It fascinates me. I can't draw, I can't paint, but I love to look at it. I love art. I love the stories behind it, but I understand nothing.
So, you know, everyone is an artist in their own way. And that's one thing that a lot of people like yourself will say, oh, I don't know anything about art and I'm not creative, but you are. You're creative in whatever field that you love. Here you are on the radio doing a podcast, interviewing people. It's an art form, different art forms, whether it's poetry, whether it's music, whether it's dance, the visual arts, all different types, mathematicians, scientists. It's all art because art cannot exist without mathematics, you know, physics, all of the laws of physics, science, even what you're doing, the technology, it's an art form. Whoever designed those headphones that you're wearing right now is an artist.
Mm-hmm. I was just talking to a lady earlier and we were talking about in regards to COVID, how it seems if one good thing aside from, you know, good hand washing hygiene. One good thing that may be a benefit of COVID is that people are being a lot more creative. People are finding passions. They're writing that book they wanted to write. They're painting. They're doing podcasts, you know. So if there's one good thing that came out of COVID, it was that. And it's good to see.
I think the other thing that I've been looking at the last year and all of the good things that have come from it. And I think that, of course, the people who have had COVID, who've lost someone, you know, from COVID, you know, my heart goes out to them. But there are many other people who have transcended their situation, whether they lost a job or they have their own business and they had to, you know, close the business for a period of time. And they learned how to pivot. They learned how to think outside of the box and learn something new. Like you said, people, whether they're writing the novel that they wanted to write, or, you know, picking up a paintbrush, or coming up with a new business idea. And what's really wonderful, and that's in your industry as well, people are more accepting of news shows, broadcasters, journalists, people doing the interview from their living room, from their office, from their kitchen. It's become more intimate. It's almost as though you really get to know the person instead of seeing the packaged person who has all their makeup done just before, you know, before they go online and in front of the camera, and they have their suit on, or they're wearing, you know, the right color dress and the right color lipstick. And now you're really seeing who that person is, how they live, and you're getting to the heart of it. I think that's beautiful. I mean, I miss getting dressed up and you know, being a little bit more formal occasionally, but I think it's nice to just be and just be yourself. And I think that's the one thing that one of the few things that we have been able to learn from and take advantage of during this time.
Absolutely. I used to apologize. I'd be like, sorry, I got my hair in a bun. You know, my hair is not done, but I stopped because I would do the hair and then the headset would get tangled in it. And I would end up putting it up in a bun anyways. And now I'm like, you're right. Watching the news. And I'm like, I think she's recording from her bedroom. It's a little more relaxed.
Right. I think especially Zoom. I mean, come on, who had ever heard of Zoom? And why didn't we buy stock in Zoom before it happened, right? But now we're learning how to communicate through these little boxes that we have, or keyboard, or our iPhone. I mean, we can do it anywhere. It's not just 9 to 5. It's not set hours. It's now. Having said that, I have not stopped. Since the lockdown, I've been having your own business. And so I own an art gallery. Mm-hmm. And my gallery represents some world-class artists, photographers. I don't know if you've heard of David Yarrow. David is basically the best-selling photographer in the world right now. And he does photographs of animals in Africa, in North America. He has this Western scenes, and he's been on fire during COVID, because so many of our clients are home. They're CEOs of companies, they're home working from their office, and they're looking at their walls. And most of my interior designer friends have never been so busy. People are renovating now. They're changing their space because now they're looking around going, oh, wait a minute. I have time now, and this is where I am. This is where I'm working. And so that's been really great. It's been great for me with my own art. And it's been one of those years where everything is new. Everything that we're doing is a new way of doing it. And I think it's good for many people to learn how to not only survive, but to transcend their situation, like I said before, to thrive. And so many people have told me that during this time period, their businesses have just taken off, even more so because of the online presence, because people are able to connect through the internet, through websites, through online marketplaces. It makes a huge difference. And that's what we've been doing with my show. My show originally opened November 15th. At Brushwood Center. And as we were going to have the opening, the lockdown happened. And so here we are with this gorgeous exhibition in this most gorgeous space I've ever had a show, and we can't do anything. So what we did was, let's get it all in an online gallery. Let people be able to click on a work. They can see it close up. They can see all the details. They'll have the description, the meanings, everything. And then what I did was I did recordings of what I was thinking when I painted it. It's very cool. We had never done this before. And it took a little bit of time, but we did it. We got it. And people have gone on. We did a Zoom dinner. All right, this was really cool. It was on the winter solstice, so December 20th. And we invited a number of our clients. And we sent dinner to their homes. All eat together.
That's amazing.
On Zoom. We had dinner together. And people were asking me questions, and we were talking about the art, and we highlighted a few pieces. You know, nobody does that. And so we did it. It was so much fun, and people loved it, and it was special.
So you were just like, everybody, it's 7 o'clock. Your food's going to get there.
Yeah.
Log in, and we're going to have fellowship, and we're going to have discussion. That's so, okay, that's a great idea. I'm doing that for Thanksgiving, so I don't have to be in the same room with everybody.
That's a great way. You can mute family members who don't want to hear.
Yeah, when Aunt Carol goes off on her tangents, like, mute.
Yeah, we have that in our family. Politics. Oof.
I'm telling you, creativity has, you know, it's crazy. But it's about taking your little 10-year-old rejection from Highlights, which hurts my heart because I loved that magazine when I was a kid. But it's taking a bad and making it a good. And in the midst of a pandemic where everybody wants to scream gloom and doom, and yes, I am not by any means making light of it. It's horrible, but you have to find some sort of thing that brings you up out of it so that you're not in like a depression or you're not just giving up and not being so angry about everything. Try to find an outlet that's a healthy, positive outlet.
I agree. I think it's really all a matter of choice. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of mindset. Some people can, they can transcend their mind. I love that word. I've used it too many times, I think, right here. Some people can just, you know, get out of their own skin. If they can just do that and just breathe, go outside and go, okay, my world is full of possibilities. Actually, that's the next series that I'm doing. And the title of the series is called My World is Full of Possibilities. And this came about. So in addition to my show at Brushwood, I'm now the artist in residence at the new Immersive Van Gogh exhibit in Chicago. And I created a series. I only had a couple weeks to get ready for this. It all came about. It just was sort of organic, the way that I was invited to be the artist in residence there, which means I have a studio at the Immersive Van Gogh exhibit, and I'm creating art, but they wanted to have artwork to hang on their walls. And I created this series of paintings that were with gold leaf and recycled plastic. The gold leaf was paying homage to the 19th century, the Gilded Age, and of course, combining it with the most prevalent material of the 21st century, plastic. And so I created these reverse paintings in a shadow box. They're like triple panel, which is what I did, the triple panel works that are in Brushwood as well. But this was a little bit different because they were a little more glitzy with the gold leaf. But because I was trying to draw in the 19th century and still keep it contemporary, I was looking at the work, and many of my imagery comes from my scuba diving underwater. I was on a scientific expedition in Indonesia in 2018. I keep wanting to say last year because, you know, 2020 sort of disappeared on us, but it was in 2018, and I was invited to be the artist on board the scientific expedition with scientists, marine biologists, oceanographers, National Geographic photographers, filmmakers, cinematographers, writers, all these really cool people who had done like thousands of dives underwater. And I had to recertify, and I had done about 20. So here I am on this liveaboard, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And I'm with all these photographers who have their $30,000, $50,000 cameras, and they're going underwater. And I have my little GoPro and I'm taking video and photographs. And I took all this gorgeous footage of coral and fish and fishes I'd never seen before and all these colors underwater. So I did a series of paintings. So this new series is called My World is Full of Possibilities. And it has to do with what's going on right now. You can't just say, oh, there's a pandemic. Everything's in lockdown. Can't do anything. There are a million things you can do. Our world is full of anything you think of. You just have to put it in your mind, get it out there, and just work towards it and let it all unfold.
Right. Just because your body is locked down, your brain doesn't have to be. Your mind, your soul, your imagination isn't on lockdown. Let it free.
Exactly. They can't take that away from you. Mm-hmm.
And when else is a perfect time? You know, when is a more perfect time? When you can't go to the movies or out to dinner, you're home. Do something with that time. Don't just sit there and become a lump and, you know, and stream, you know, shows on Netflix. I mean, go ahead if you want, but clear off your dining room table, get some paper out and paints and just like get that stuff, get a laundry basket, put it, you know, over here, you know, in the dining room or wherever, if you have like a family room with a big table, and just say to your kids, hey, we're going to take an hour. We're going to be creative. Or maybe it is on the computer. Maybe it's like teaching yourself how to program video games or write a little story.
Right. Well, I think people have been programmed to just do their thing. Wake up in the morning, go to work, eat lunch, do your business, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you know, you're done, go home, go out to dinner, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe that makes people happy to have a schedule, to have this habitual life where you become sort of numb to it now. And I think a lot of people didn't realize how numb they were. I think they didn't realize that everything what they were doing was just like habit, where they just couldn't get out of it. And so when they were trapped at home, they didn't know what to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. The ones who are not afraid of change, they said, okay. And the ones who were afraid of change, it was even better for them, because then they had to, they had to challenge themselves. And it's wonderful. You know, I did, when I was 47 years old, I learned how to really swim. I did my first triathlon. So I was able to, you know, barely tread water in a pool. And I could swim, but I couldn't swim a quarter mile or a half mile or a 1 mile by the time I was done. I remember I have two boys, and at the time, they're grown up now. And at the time I did my first triathlon, I was, you know, run by a swim, bike, run. And at the end of, just as I was coming to the finish line, I heard a voice on the side go, "That's my mom."
Aww.
Oh my God. It's like the greatest thing to be able to hear that from your child. And I mean, there are two grown men now, but it was really beautiful. But then my last triathlon was the Nautica in Malibu. And I had just done the Chicago Triathlon 2 weeks before. My body was exhausted and I wasn't going to do it. It was so exciting being there with all the people. And I'd never done the run into the ocean, done the jump into the lake in Chicago. And this was the one where you all run in and there were 6 8-foot waves. And I'm looking at that going, am I out of my mind? I mean, I'm a good swimmer now. I've never done an ocean swim like that before. So the waves were roaring. I'm thinking, I can't do this. So I put in my earplugs and my swim cap, and all of a sudden there was dead silence. As soon as I stopped hearing the sound of the waves, my fear disappeared. And then I heard the bugle go off and I saw people running. So I start running with them and running into the ocean, and these waves are coming at me and they're pushing me back, and I'm literally drowning. I get up and I'm trying to, you know, swim through the waves. Can't do it. Knocks me right back underwater. And then I heard a voice say to me, "Go under, go under." And so I went under. I came back up on the other side of the wave, and it was like a sheet of glass. I had my best personal record that I ever had that day, and I had to overcome my fear. And it was one of the most, I don't know, satisfying, you know, it's like your heart is like, I did it. I just, I did this and overcame my fear. And I think that's what's going on now with people. It's like they think that COVID is like these big giant, you know, 8-foot waves coming down and drowning you, when instead all you have to do is just be still and be silent. And my series that I've done that's gone around the world actually is called I Flow Like Water. And you have to just flow like water, and just let it come to you and then flow through it. Don't let it knock you out. Let it go through you. And that's what Bruce Lee taught. I don't know if you know Bruce Lee.
Oh, I know Bruce. Well, I don't know him, but yes, I know who he is.
You know, karate. He would teach his students, when someone was punching them, let it go through them. Mm-hmm. Like water. Now, I didn't take my title for my show from Bruce Lee, but one day I was looking online for I Flow Like Water and he came up and I'm like, oh, Bruce Lee thought of this before I did. How dare he? So anyway, that's how I feel about everything in life.
Yeah. I might be wrong, but something about the more you continue to learn as you get older, the healthier your brain is, I think.
Like learning a new language. I started taking French lessons when the lockdown happened because, you know, I still had that latent French somewhere in my mind, but when you don't speak a language, you know, like Spanish. I mean, I took Spanish when I was in junior high and high school. My teacher was Cuban, so I had more of a Cuban accent. But yeah, they say learn a language. Like you said, do crossword puzzles. You have to tax your brain in some way where you're learning something and not stressing your brain.
Right. Because I feel like that's the more healthier option, to learn a language or to play trivia games or do the crossword, rather than sitting in your own mind and stewing in your thoughts about, you know, nonsense or that argument that you and your coworker got into, you know, this morning. Try to find the more positive, healthier aspect of it.
Yes. So we're going to do a show coming up this fall. And it's going to be called I Am Ocean.
Oh.
So, you know, everything that I do is water related because I just love water.
I saw on your bio on your website, I was like, she did what now?
Yeah, I look at it this way. We have one life that we know of. I don't know about reincarnation. I don't know about other lives, past lives, future lives. We have this life right now. Let's make it count. Let's do something that when you're 80, 90, 100 years old, who knows how long we're going to live. You know, I'm going to live to be 110, but actually I had my great grandmother lived to be 105. Yeah. And
Dang.
So I've said to myself, I don't want to just wake up, eat my bagel, you know, take a shower, get dressed, go to work, talk to people, have lunch, talk to a few more people, try to make a sale, do whatever it is, come home and watch Netflix. That's sort of like being, to me, that's not living.
Going through the motions.
That is going through the motions. That's just surviving and not accomplishing anything of value, except, you know, of course, you're paying your rent or your mortgage. You're, you know, that's a value, of course. And we need to do those things that are maybe not so fun or creative. Mm-hmm. We can do it in a creative way. We can turn everything into, there was a book that I read once, and it said, turn work into play. Everything you do should be play.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing right now is play. We should be enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
Me too.
I'm so excited to be able to talk to someone about my thoughts and then hearing what their thoughts are. And learning from them. I learn from you. I learn from everyone I speak to because it's important to listen. And that's your job. You're a great listener.
Oh, thank you.
And that's what's beautiful is taking this one life that we have, this body of ours, taking good care of it, and then turning it into something that is of value, maybe not only to ourselves, but to others. And not everyone can do the same thing. Everybody does something different. Everyone has a talent in some way, shape, or form. They just don't really know. They just need to tap into them, maybe stop and breathe 5 minutes. Just stop and just do a breathing exercise or go outside. I'm guilty. I don't go outside enough because I've been so busy and, you know, I need to work out more. I love to work out. I actually love to work out. You know, my husband hates it. Sure. And for me, I'm like, yes, let's go in. We have a gym in our house now. And that was lucky, by the way, during the pandemic, we have a gym and he even built a sauna for us. Very cool.
That's amazing.
Happiness is actually one of the factors of being successful, because you could be successful and make money, and what's the point if you're miserable? What's the point of having everything in the world? Having the most beautiful home, having the car that you want, being able to go anywhere, if you don't have love, if you don't have good health, if you don't have family who cares about you and friends. You know, it's many, many years ago, I did a show called The Art of Feng Shui. You know, the Chinese, the art of balance and harmony. And there were 8 life aspects in the Bagua. And these are good health, your marriage, family, children, helpful people, career, your prosperity, all of that. And it all had to be in balance. Everything has to be in balance. And so I'm guilty. I'm a workaholic. I can't stop. Sometimes I just can't sleep at nights. And I know that I have to take my own advice. I know that I need to rest. I have to sleep better. But I have all these projects that I'm so excited about that I just can't stop. And what's going to happen is I'm going to burn myself out. So I know that I have to stop. And I have to rest, and I have to breathe, and I have to go outside, you know, let the sun shine down on me. Now, you can do that much better than we can in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had really good weather. It's been in the 60s here all week.
That's almost not sweater weather.
No, it's been really nice. I don't know. It's just about choices in life. You know, I have on my website, I have a quote, and there are a couple of things that I believe in. One of them is that we cannot allow circumstances to choose our path.
Mm-hmm.
We have to choose our path and our circumstances. And there's one quote that I read in a book many, many years ago, and I've lived by this quote, and it is, we all choose what we wish to be. No one impels or compels us. The same wind which blows a ship on the rocks can just as easily blow it into safe harbor. In short, it is not the wind, it is the set of the sail.
Exactly.
I just love every time I think, oh boy, why did this happen? And then I think to myself, how can I set my sail in the direction that I want? And I think that's the key to life.
Mm-hmm. And how many times has someone said to themselves, why is this happening to me? Why? As if
they're
the outs. Yeah, exactly. As if they're a victim, and as if it's the outside force. Sometimes it is. I will give you that caveat, but it's not always an outside force that is doing something to you. You have to really look inside. I don't know if this is a quote or if something someone just said, if one person has a problem with you, it might be that person. If two people have a problem with you, it could still maybe be them. But if 3 or more people have a problem with you, it's you, right? People have to take self-accountability and say, maybe because of me, I am not where I want to be or think I should be. Maybe it's me. Maybe I am not the victim. Maybe it's not everybody's against me or the universe is against me. And really just look into yourself and say, well, maybe, like you said, set your sail. What can I do different? What should I do different to get me where I want to be?
Yeah, I think a lot of people refuse to take responsibility for their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had, when you have your own business, you have employees and something goes wrong. And then you wonder, you talk to the employee and they'll say, well, it wasn't me, you know, so-and-so, or this happened and that happened. And it's like, okay, they blame others for the mistakes they've made or whatever has happened to themselves. And then, mm-hmm. so that's always like a red flag for me. Not take responsibility and who put blame. Can't stand people who blame others.
Or even if it was you. Oh no, that was me. I'm sorry. Let me fix it. You know, accountability.
That's what I was getting at. You actually phrased it far better than I did.
No,
seriously, that's exactly what I'm getting at. Just take ownership of it,
mm-hmm.
and say, it was my mistake. I'm going to take care of it. I'll fix it. Yeah,
right.
I agree. I think, and I mean, you know, you can't change people and you can't change the way they think or behave. Everyone has to choose for themselves, just who we surround ourselves by.
Yep. And you cannot really change other people. You can influence them to be better people in a, and I don't mean like in a bullying way, but by your own example, you can influence them to be a better person. You cannot change other people to make them be the kind of person you are, if that makes sense.
Totally. Totally. It's like the story I told about when I was going across the finish line, mm-hmm. and I heard my son say, that's my mom. I felt just at that moment, I was teaching my children by example Because if we don't, someone had asked me a question about the environment and about, the plastic pollution. And what can we teach children of, this new generation? And I said, those kids already know about the environment. They're already doing it. We're the ones who have to change. We're the ones who need to teach them by example.
Exactly.
Not by telling them to do it, but doing it ourselves.
And it's one thing, like, say you have a 5-year-old, they're in kindergarten, their teacher's telling them how important it is to recycle and to be good to the environment. And then they come home and they see mom or dad toss their plastic water bottle in the regular garbage instead of the recycle, or, they don't model the behavior that the child is learning in school. Well, the kid's going to be like, well, my daddy doesn't do it. I'm going to believe my daddy over my teacher. We have such a responsibility to those little minds because monkey see, monkey do.
No, you're right about that. That's the key, is the only way we can teach is by doing it ourselves and being the example. Now, what is it? Be the change that we want, something like that.
And it is, it's such a heavy, you're a mom, it's such a heavy responsibility.
It is. I mean, raising children with the right attitude, with the right mindset to be able to go forward and do something great. A lot of parents I know of my generation, they worked really hard. They started their business from nothing, and then they give their children everything, and the kid doesn't work for anything. And now you have these children who have no clue how to survive on their own because they weren't taught that, because they were given everything. I have one employee, and I adore him. He's one of my most trusted employees in my gallery. And his father became very, very successful in his life and sold a major company. And he taught his son a good work ethic. So when this young man came to work for me, I wasn't sure how he was going to be. And he's the hardest working, most loyal, most trusted employee I could ever hope for. And I feel I want to pinch myself because I feel so fortunate. And I've hired a couple of other people. I think I have another one who's turning into that now. But it's because of the environment. It's the work environment, and it's the trust we give them, and then it's rewarding them for all the good work that they do. And being a good boss and being understanding and trying to help them to excel. I think that's what it is more than anything. So there's so many components to life. It's not just being creative, because in the creative field, I tell a lot of artists whenever I give talks at art schools, they'll talk about being a starving artist, like it's a badge of honor. That is not a badge of honor, okay? And then they'll say, oh, I'm not a commercial artist. I'm not doing it for the money. Okay. Why are you doing it? Do you have a sugar daddy? Do you have some parents? Do you have someone to support you? Do you want to work for the rest of your life as a server in a restaurant? You have to understand the value of your creativity, what you're doing. You have to learn to monetize it in a proper way, and you have to learn how to present yourself properly without looking like you're trying to monetize it. It's like this balance, walking on a tightrope almost. But once you get it, and once you understand that being paid for your creativity, for what you offer the world, is such a rewarding way of making a living.
Also, it's your due. I mean, yes, make art for the sake of art because you have a passion for it. But if it's your calling, why would you not allow yourself to be paid to do it? And they call it being a sellout or whatever. It's like, okay.
Well, let's see, Andy Warhol, Jeff Koons, Damien Hirst, some of the most famous artists in museums, with the exception of Vincent. All right. And this is interesting for me, being the artist in residence now at Van Gogh, because I love his works, and I'm actually reading the Audible book right now, Dear Theo, and it's his letters. He was so brilliant. He spoke so many languages. And the poor guy sold nothing during his lifetime. He was had a very tragic life. Then you go to someone like Michelangelo or Leonardo. These guys did it for the money. They did it because they love, they're good and they're talented, But they negotiated their contracts with the Pope and with the Vatican and with the de Medicis and all these guys who were bankers. Everything was a transaction. Those are the people that went down in history because they valued themselves.
Not Tom Smith, who just, painted and gave it away every day.
Right. I mean, we all do. I mean, I've given away a lot of paintings and over the years, but on the other hand, now, and I'm very fortunate that I've come to a point in my life that people will commission me to do works, or I have wonderful galleries who show my work. It's been like one of the most, I can't explain it. It's like my heart swells and I'm so proud. I'm able to create something that is going to be a communication and enhance someone else's life. When they take one of my works of art and they fall in love with it and they want to hang it in their above their bed or in their living room or dining room, wherever, or in their museum. I feel now that connection to that person. I feel a connection to that collector. They have a part of me now, and part of me now lives on. It's such a beautiful to be able to do that. You
It's a
know,
legacy.
it is in a sense, and it can be anything. It can be a visual art. It can be a piece of music when someone listens to your song. It can be a dance. They come and they see you perform. It can be anything, a film that you're making, you're acting, whatever it is. All of it is art. All of it. And even like I said, the mathematics, Leonardo is actually my all-time favorite character as far as an artist, because he was more than just a painter. He was a mathematician. He was a scientist. He was an inventor. He was a botanist. He was a researcher. He would buy birds in cages and he would set them free so that he, well, and he was a vegetarian, by the way. He wouldn't eat meat, which is interesting, I mean,
This is breaking news.
oh yeah. Leonardo was really, he was one of the most interesting. He was such a genius. He would let the birds go and he would record their flight and he would have drawings of their the wings and flight, and he would actually go to the morgue and he would dissect bodies and he would learn about the heart. He did research on the heart that scientists now, doctors today, are going, wow, Leonardo actually figured this out in the 15th century, 16th century. Incredible.
He was phenomenal. Talk about the perfect guest.
He was, it's so funny. He was a procrastinator and he
Oh.
did very few drawings or paintings in his lifetime because he was a perfectionist and he would come in and he would get a commission and they would try to make him sign a contract, like putting a date on there, because they knew that if they commissioned him for something, it may take years before they got it. I love Leonardo. He was just so cool, but he was brilliant and he created painting techniques that no one had done before. He lived his life with joy. He did what he wanted to do. One day he wanted to invent a cannon. He wanted to invent a flying machine. He invented so many things. I think a helicopter, like he had like a propeller and he had all these. And so he didn't even think of himself as an artist. He thought of himself more as an inventor and a scientist and a mathematician.
He's the definition of a creative.
Sure
Is
was.
he, is Leonardo one of the ones that they thought might have been on like the autism spectrum?
I think so, because when I read the book, I kept thinking he had to be autistic or have Asperger's or something like that. And so many people who are autistic are brilliant. I mean, it's interesting. I have a couple of friends who are autistic and they're brilliant in their field. One is an architect, and you can see their wheels turning.
Oh, and that attention to detail when they get obsessed about it, or that those couple things that they know and precision.
I wish I had that concentration. I'm too ADD these days. A lot of it has to do with my iPhone and with social media, Instagram, Facebook. It's like it takes over your life. It really does, and you have to do it. So, I it's not my thing. On the other hand, like for our business, for the gallery, you have to be on social media because
Yeah.
our we represent like famous photographers and different artists. Like one Paul Nicklin, who is a National Geographic photographer. He has almost 7 million followers on Instagram.
Holy cow.
And it's like, oh, I saw this piece on Paul's Instagram post. Do you have this? We sure do.
Mm-hmm.
Here, call our gallery direct. So I'm not at the gallery that much anymore. I don't have to be, so I can focus on my own art, which is really nice. I'm very fortunate with that. But yeah, social media, it makes you ADD, I'm telling you.
That's just... Yeah, I'm definitely like Jeremy the Crow with the shiny object.
Yes. Like... Oh, shiny objects. But then again, you know, as a woman, you know, we can multitask, right?
Of course, as long as we can talk to ourselves while we're doing it.
I forget people's names. And then all of a sudden, I'll be like, okay, what was that person's name? What was that person's name? And then like a few minutes later, yep. Now I remember, you know, I think I have like delayed thought process because of all of this. I don't know, with the smartphones and the, I don't know if it's radiation, what it is, but I really believe it's changing our brain cells.
Well, we have too many tabs open.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're doing okay. We're doing all right. So I have written down, because I want to promote everything you're doing. I have Brushwood Center and Ryerson Woods. That's R-E-Y or R-Y-E-R?
R-Y. Okay. So on April 17th and 18th and the 24th and 25th, we have a special event at Brushwood Center at Ryerson Woods, which is the art center where my exhibition is showing right now, of my paintings and poetry. And we will be doing the exhibition there and opening. People will come. I will do a tour of the show and we'll talk about the work, and we'll do an artist talk. And then right afterwards, we're going to go a mile, I think it is, a mile down the road to the River Woods Village Hall, where we will have a concert with Vladimir Kolenovich. And he was the former conductor of the Lake Forest Symphony. He's a wonderful pianist. And he will give a small concert. I will do a poetry reading of my poems, and people will see my monumental hanging mobiles that are all about the tides. And the title of the show is called Tides, a Prelude. And so this is the first part of this show that we're having, this exhibition. And the tides are not just about the gravitational pull of the sun and moon on Earth's waters, basically, but it's about tides, whether it's tides of change, tides of a political movement, of a thought process, a philosophy, anything. It's about the tides of life. And I think right now we're going through a tide of change. Yeah, and so that's what this show is about. I wrote a poem, three poems that are in the show, and they were printed as broadsides. I don't know if you've ever heard of a broadside.
Like the poster that would be on the fence or the wall. Okay.
Yes, back you know, a few hundred years ago, those were announcements that would be posted on a pole or on the side of a building. And so poets decided to take that art form and turn it into a poetry print with art. So it's illustrated or a painting with, and so we have one of them is about a woman. What it is to be a woman, and it's called Hieroglyph. And it starts out, if reduced to a hieroglyph, how would someone translate me 1,000 years from now? And so that's how the poem starts out. And then there's another one that I did. I wrote it about 4 years ago, actually. And it seemed apropos during all of our political crises going on. And it's called A Time to Heal. And it's about people trying to listen to one another from both sides of the fence. Doesn't matter which party you belong to, which faction you belong to, you know, not just political parties. And it's about trying to learn to understand one another and embrace the other's thought and just listening so that we're not poles apart. We're not left-wing extremist or right-wing extremist. We're trying to come to the middle and hear each other out. And the last stanza of that is, I have one wing, you have another, together we can fly.
We need that nowadays, because people cannot People can't have a conversation. They can't. It has to be a shouting match. It has to be families divided.
We've had many Thanksgivings and Christmases ruined.
Yeah.
Between my boys are opposite ends of the spectrum. One says one thing, the other says another, and all of a sudden they're yelling at each other, and you know, it becomes a screaming match. And then I'm in the middle going, all right, guys, stop. Okay.
Right.
I don't care what either of you believe. It's Thanksgiving. Let's just be together. Let's enjoy.
Pass the mashed potatoes.
I know. But so my poetry is about being human, basically. And it's about being human in our environment. You know, one of them, and the third poem that's in the show is called I Heard an Oak Tree. And it's about an oak tree. The oak tree is lamenting in the breeze. And he says, I was here before you, rooted like you, reaching like you. And it's the same as a human.
Mm-hmm.
We're like the oak tree. We're one and the same. You know, we want to be rooted, but we want to keep on reaching. And so that show is one of my favorite shows I've ever done at Brushwood Center. They've given me a platform that has just been so open and inviting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being in nature, they do so many good things. They do workshops with children. They do workshops with veterans. They do a lot of things that, you know, most galleries don't do.
This is a big, beautiful building in the middle of 500 plus acres of a nature preserve.
It's a gorgeous building that was a home, actually.
Oh, wow.
They transformed it. It's a good size. It's a big home. And they transformed it into a gallery space.
That's amazing.
Right.
People can find all this information on your website and buy tickets via your website.
What they can do is they can go to my website and then they can click on the link to Brushwood to purchase tickets. And it's ericahilton.com, Erica with an A, ericahilton.com. And, or they can go to brushwoodcenter.org.
All
right. They'll guide you on theirs, but just really cool people, very creative staff. I mean, they had a show, was it last year or the year before? I keep saying last year, nothing was last year.
Time means nothing.
Yes. Robert Redford and his wife, Billy Shigars Redford, had a beautiful show there called The Way of the Rain.
Mm.
And it was a performance and art exhibit. And that was so gorgeous. And then they also had a show for Gregory Leon Baird, who's an architect, who also happens to be the architect for Robert Redford. I don't know how that came about. He's internationally known as well. So they do like major, major shows, like museum shows at this art center. It's just beautiful.
It sounds like it's definitely worth a trip. So April 17th and 18th and 24th and 25th at the Brushwood Center in Riverwood, Illinois.
Yep.
I want to keep in touch with you.
Thank you, Papa. I feel the same. I'm going to come visit you in Florida.
You should just like message me when you're on your way to Miami and we'll grab dinner or lunch or something over on the beach.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Seriously. We're going to be down there in a couple of weeks.
Okay. We will make it happen. I love talking to you. You're amazing.
You are too.
You made me tear up a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I love you. And I want to talk more with you. Okay.
I feel the same. Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.